if we want to overcome the darkness in our lives, the darkness that creeps in, the things that we struggle with, the things that are hard for us, we have to be willing to do something, to change something, to try something different.
And I'm convinced that the human spirit was not designed to simply maintain normal. Somewhere along the line, we forget that our job wasn't to maintain normal. Our job was to step into an unprecedented future, where God continually presses us into what's next.
God will never ask you to respond to a call that doesn't already speak to the best part of you, the part of you that was designed for greatness, that deep down knows that there is something more.
Hey, and welcome to the Mosaic Pomona podcast. I hope that you enjoy this week's talk and want to invite you to join us live on Sundays at 10 a.m. at the Glasshouse Concert Hall in beautiful downtown Pomona. Or you can join the conversation at www.mosaicpomona.org. You can also download the Mosaic Pomona app on iTunes or Android and keep up with the conversation and community there. If you would like to financially support this podcast and the ongoing movement at Mosaic Pomona, visit us online at mosaicpomona.org/give or check out the giving option on the Mosaic app. Enjoy this week's talk.
How many of you have heard the story that a diamond is forever? Ever heard that story before? And there's also a story that was introduced to our society that says you need to spend 2 months' salary on an engagement ring. Ever heard that one before? Nice story. You actually know that was invented by the diamond company in the 1920s during the Depression? Well, when diamonds were actually losing their value, and so they decided that they needed to make up this story, that if you were going to get married, you needed to, first of all, save up 2 months' worth of salary, as if that was the determinants of the length of your marriage, right? And that diamonds, above every other precious stone, were what you needed. And still, to this day, it is ingrained in our mind that an engagement ring must have a big, fat diamond on it. And stories have the power to shift the way we see things, the way we shift reality. And the scriptures, interesting enough, start off the human narrative. After all of creation, after all that has taken place, with a lie. See, God actually established humanity in the perfect context. He placed humanity in this garden setting where everything they had was available, everything they needed was available to them. God walked and talked among them. It was this perfect setup for truth to have perspective laying in reality. There were no need for lies or stories or covering up. And we find ourselves in the exact place where we needed to be. What could ever go wrong, right? And if you turn to Genesis chapter 3, starting in verse 1, turn there with me if you have a copy of the scriptures or an app. If you need a copy of the Bible and you don't have one, just raise your hand. One of our connection team members will give you one. We'd love to give you a Bible. It's one of our favorite things. But right after God has created all of creation and he places Adam and Eve in this garden in this perfect setting, he basically says, you guys can do whatever you want. Just one thing that I'm gonna ask you not to do. There's this tree. It's called the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And I'm just gonna ask you not to eat that. Everything else, up to you, right? You think this is the perfect setup to get it right, where there are literally an infinite number of good choices and one bad choice. You would think that the scale was tipped on humanity's side. But in Genesis chapter 3, starting in verse 1, it says, "Now the serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals the Lord had made. And he said to the woman, 'Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden?' And the woman said to the serpent, We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say, you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it or you will die. For you will not certainly die, the serpent said to the woman. For God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be open and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing for the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some of it and ate it. She also gave some of it to her husband who was with her, and he ate it." See, this is where the downfall of human society begins, right here in this moment. And it's interesting because the downfall of human society, the downfall, the darkness that overcomes us actually starts with a lie. Because God has set humanity up to live in reality, to live in a space where we are actually walking and talking with the creator of the universe, giving us infinite wisdom to tell us how to live. And their one commandment is not to eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And see, it wasn't his attempt to control them whatsoever. One, it was an attempt to give them freedom. so that they could actually have a choice to do evil if they wanted to. See, it's interesting, this tree, the knowledge of good and evil. See, because they had already known good. All they had known was good. In fact, the scriptures say that everything that God had created was good. So they actually already had half of what that tree offered. The thing that God was trying to protect them from was the knowledge of evil in human story. And he was saying, look, don't eat from this tree because I do not want evil introduced into the human story. And it's interesting that evil enters the human story through a lie. It enters the human story through a story. This serpent comes and he says, you know what, God's not fair. He's actually keeping something from you, something really, really valuable. And you probably shouldn't trust him because he's not really generous with what he has to offer. Now, that's a lie that probably sounds familiar. We'll address that in another week. But this is what they come with. It's interesting that all evil still enters into our story through a lie, through a story, through something we believe to be true that actually isn't true. And it whispers into our ear, there's something available that you are unaware of. The question is, why do we actually believe this? Well, why would we ever believe this lie? See, we believe in lies that we actually know are true, that they're actually lies, right? Isn't that frustrating? When you believe something and you're like, I know this is a lie. I said last week, there's this lie that pops into my head every now and then that says, you're never gonna get healthy. Ever had that thought before? Like, diets don't work for me. Ever had that thought before? And I know that not to be true. I know it's a lie, and yet it still pops in every now and then, and I go, where did that come from? See, here's the thing. I'm going to operate from the presupposition, and I know it's a foolish thing to operate from, but I'm going to operate from the presupposition that no one in here is crazy, all right? I'm just going to operate from that perspective that no one in here is crazy, that you actually got up this morning, you hopefully showered or took care of yourself in some way, shape, or form, you have clothes on, and you got yourself here, which tells me that you're not actually insane. See, we actually believe lies not because we're crazy. We believe lies because we get something out of them. There's something that we got out of them. There's a goodie, there's a reward that we get from actually living in a story, from living in a lie. See, Eve actually believed that God was withholding from her after she started believing this lie. That God must be withholding something from me. Now, it's interesting because up until this point, there was no evidence to prove that story right. In fact, all the evidence was pointing to God is generous and that he's giving everything he has to you and he's setting you up for success. And the story that Eve chooses to believe is God is stingy. Crazy, right? That God is stingy in the middle of this. But Eve saw this independence, this ability to have wisdom and knowledge beyond what was hers, and it was enticing to her. And she looked at that and she said, "Ooh, that looks good. That looks good. That looks a little more appetizing than what I have right here." See, lies become the subversive way, the subversive tool that we use to get what we want. They become the back door to get what God's actually attempting to give us all along. They become the pathway that leads us in to get what we think we want, and it becomes the perfect excuse to actually do nothing in life. To live in comfort, to kick back and sit back. But the problem is that as we begin to engage these lies and we begin to actually get what we say we want, a little independence, a little wisdom, that they actually begin to distort reality so much that we start seeing things that were never even there. We start believing things that never actually happened. See, because after she starts taking this apple and says, man, I've got wisdom now. I know the difference between good and evil. I have this new superpower. All of a sudden, she looks down and she goes, oh, I'm naked, right? Now, just a second before, she was naked, but it wasn't a problem, right? Adam was naked, but it wasn't a problem. And now they found themselves with this newfound knowledge that is twisted in front of them. And because she went through a story to get this newfound knowledge, it ended up twisting how she saw herself and Adam. See, the lie actually moved her to shame. See, I wonder for how many of us the shame that we often live in is because it's connected to the lies that we're believing about the reality around us. The lies about us, the lies about other people, the lies about God. I wonder how often the shame that creeps into our lives that sounds like I shouldn't be or they shouldn't be or it shouldn't be. Ever heard those words before? that they creep in and that shame becomes to take over because it's all connected to the story that we believed. And this is intimately connected to the lie that we're going to address today. This is a good one. I really, really enjoy this one. How many of you have ever had the thought, I don't make a difference in this world? Let's just be honest. How many of you have ever had that thought before? I don't make a difference in this world. Now, it has a few stepsisters, a few cousins to it, right? The other ones are, I don't really matter. Anyone had that thought before? I just don't really matter. Or how about this one? I can't really make the difference that I want to make. That's a good one, right? like I know that I make a difference, but I actually can't make the difference that I long to make. And the distant step cousin is no one really cares about me. Those are all intimately connected with one another. I don't make a difference. I don't make the difference I want to make. I don't really matter. No one really cares about me. This is how we find ourselves at times in life. It's the story that creeps into us. Now, this one actually is a lie. I know last week we addressed the issue of, am I good enough, which is actually true. But this one, don't worry, we're not going to take a left turn to Albuquerque. It is a lie. And we do believe it, and it affects us at a deep, deep level. But there is such a deeper question that is connected to the story of, I don't make a difference in this world. You know, the thing is that we live in a relational universe. That's the way God has actually set up the world. Everything is intimately connected with one another. Everything affects one another. There's not a thing that you can do on this planet that doesn't affect someone else, which is why it drives me crazy when people say, well, you can have your truth and I can have my truth as long as it doesn't affect one another. There is no decision that you make on the planet that doesn't affect someone. Even what I ate for breakfast this morning is affecting my metabolism and my energy to be here with you. So whether I had Wheaties or a donut depends on how I give my talk this morning. There is no decision that you make that doesn't have some type of effect on yourself and others and the circumstances around you. We live in this universe all the time. This means that God, when he created the world, he set things up so that they would influence one another. See, the way that the moon goes across the universe actually affects the rise and fall of the tides. You think that the moon, thousands and billions of miles away, would not affect the rise and fall of the ocean. But somehow, they're intimately connected with one another. That we can follow the moon, and it will tell us exactly where the tide's going to be that day. We look up at the sky, and we see that when the sun rises and it sets, it actually affects the winds that come into an area. We have sunflowers that are growing next door to us in the house, and it's amazing how those sunflowers then follow that exact same pattern of the sun all through the day to get the nutrients they need. And there is this intimate connection between everything. Marla and I were driving to Arizona last November, and Marla's like a podcast junkie. I mean, if there's a spare moment, she has her headphones in, and it's NPR or something, right? But she's a podcast junkie. And so we drove to Arizona listening to nothing but podcasts, which was wonderful. And there was a podcast that came on that started talking about all of the things that are like going wrong in the world. And I thought, this is fascinating. But one fascinating episode came up about bees. And talk about the epidemic that is happening right now, that bees are dying all over the planet. And we're actually having a bee shortage everywhere we go. I don't know if you know about this, but we're actually hitting a crisis level of bee deaths, right? There's a genocide happening that we don't even know is taking place all over the world. And the fascinating thing about bees that I didn't know about is that of all the crops that we eat, bees are responsible for 70% of the pollination. 70% of the pollination. And there are some crops that they are saying have the real possibility of going extinct within the next 20 years if the bee population doesn't come back. One of those foods are avocados, people. So if you like guacamole, you should be very afraid about the bee situation, right? But you know, it's crazy because when bees used to get into our house, those things were dead before. But now I'm like, save the thing, save the avocados, right? Get that thing, put it in a cup, put it outside. I don't care if you get stung, that bee needs to live, right? Because everything is intimately connected with one another and has this natural relationship that moves with one another. And if this is how the universe is set up, between bees and avocados and the moon and the rising and falling of the tides, how much more so is the relational universe that God has actually designed between people? How much more so is the relational impact that God has actually set up between one another? It's interesting because the scriptures are chocked full of conversation about this. In Ephesians chapter 2, starting in verse 10, it says, "For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do." See, Ephesians 2 says that you were actually designed to do good works of service for other people. Now, here's the thing. What kind of God would inform you that you were designed to do good works, to actually give your life away, to go create good all around you? But everything that you did, that you attempted to do that was good, was futile. That you had no impact. I mean, could you imagine this? You go to serve, and you just give yourself, and give yourself, and give yourself, and then you look out at the world around you, and you're like, no difference, right? That would be maddening, wouldn't it? Could you imagine if you took your resources and you just invested it into places where God was moving and you just said, I'm gonna give my money, I'm gonna give my time, I'm gonna give my resources, I'm gonna throw everything I have at this, and there's not even a dent made. Wouldn't that drive you insane? Could you imagine if you went and you invested in someone and you invested and you invested and you invested and their life actually got worse as a result of your intervention? Now, some of you are like, yes, those are called children, but... But that would be a cruel God, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be a cruel God who actually said, hey, you were designed to do good works. I've actually planned them in advance for you. Go have at it. And then when you actually attempt to, you're completely incapable of it. That would be a cruel God that I'm actually not interested in serving whatsoever. In John chapter 13, 34 through 35, it says, a new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. And now, it says that you are commanded to love one another, which from my perspective makes the greatest difference on the planet when you get committed to loving the people around you. Now, what kind of God would it be if he said, I command you to love, but you are completely incapable of loving? Well, what kind of God would that be? If he said, the greatest commandment that I'm giving you right now is to go love others, and that's the only way that people will know that you love me, and you go and you attempt to give your love, and it's just like, ugh. And there's no possibility of giving love away. See, that would be like me going to Jackson, my 16-month-old son, and saying, do your calculus, son. Sit down and do your calculus, boy, right? And coming back a few minutes later, while he's scribbled all over the page and going, what? You imbecile, what is wrong with you? See, that would be a cruel God who would come to us and say, you are commanded to love, and then actually set you up every single time to fail at loving the world. See, either God is cruel in his design and calling over your life, that he is malaligned in his intentions for your life, or he's actually telling the truth. He's actually speaking a reality over your life that at times we can't see because of this story. That you were actually made to serve the world through love. And from my perspective, that makes the greatest difference that I could ever imagine. Of us actually going out and serving humanity with all of the love that is available to us. See, but the problem is that this story, I'm not making a difference in this world, or I'm not really actually making the difference that I long to, it actually blinds you from seeing this reality. So the problem is that when we go out and we see the world through the lens of I don't really make a difference, we shrink back, we hold back, we withhold, we make ourselves small and insignificant, and we refuse to engage community because it's futile. Why would you engage if it doesn't really make a difference anyways? See, the problem, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. I look at the world and I see I don't make a difference, so I shrink back, I withdraw. I withdraw my participation from my relationships and from my career and from the people that matter most in my life. I shrink back and I make myself small, and then I look out and I say, see, I don't really make a difference. I told me so. It becomes the story that repeats itself over and over and over again. So the question will never be, do you make a difference in this world? The question should never be, do I make a difference in this world? The question should be, what kind of difference am I making? What is the difference that I am making here and now, in this moment that I've been given? See, because Jesus actually had some very choice words to inform us of who we are and the impact that we make. Turn with me to Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 13. Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 13. This is what Jesus says to us about the impact that we make on one another. He says this, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden, neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. And in the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." See, Jesus loved metaphors. He was like the king of metaphors. And he starts out with this metaphor saying, you are the salt of the earth, right? This isn't something that you really see like on a Valentine's Day card to your wife. Honey, you're so salty, right? But this is what he says to me. He says, you are the salt of the earth. Now, salt in our context is just something that we have sitting on our table in a little jar. But back in the time that this was written, salt had a lot of value. In fact, some soldiers were actually paid in salt. That's how valuable it was. And salt had a lot of uses. Salt was used as a preservative. They didn't have refrigerators, so they would often keep their meat encapsulated in salt. Salt was used as a fertilizer in the ground with crops. It was used as an antiseptic agent when people were cut so they wouldn't bleed out or they wouldn't get some type of infection for them. But it seems like what Jesus is referring to in this conversation is actually that salt brings flavor to anything that it is put into. If you're a cook or if you're a chef, you know that this is the case. Marla and I started eating healthy last November and going through this plan together. And one of the things that I've cut out of most of my diet is salt. And I can tell you, food tastes a lot different when you cut out salt, trust me. When you start going through dishes and taking out the salt, you will realize that was not actually a good dish. That was just a lot of good salt in that dish. And things start tasting different because the salt is removed out, because salt enhances the flavor of almost anything that you put it on. I mean, even watermelon, you put it on, it tastes better, right? Things that salt should never go on. It tastes delicious because it enhances the flavor of everything that it goes with. Something that was once bland and almost inedible can become quite edible if you just put a little salt on it, right? Salt has this natural ability to bring out what was supposed to be there. See, it's why salt is in everything. You know, the crazy thing is, next time you go shopping, turn over the nutrition label and find out how much sodium is in every single product that you buy. I'm just gonna ruin your week, all right? This last week, I thought I was eating really healthy. I meal prepped for the whole week and went to Costco and I got green beans, the no salt green beans. And I get them in and I put them in my MyFitnessPlan and I look at everything and my trainer goes, "Where'd you get your green beans?" I said, "Costco." But I said, "There's no salt in them," because I knew what was coming, right? And she said, "Did you check the sodium?" And I said, "No, there are no salt." And she said, "There's 400 milligrams of salt in the no salt beans." I'm like, "What?" She said, "Yes, they don't have to count the water that the beans are actually in, that they just weren't actually cooked with sodium, but they were preserved with sodium." See, sodium's in everything because not only does it enhance the flavor, but it preserves what is good in this. And in the same way, we were designed to be the flavor that comes with life. We were designed to be those that step into the bland, mundane spaces of life and become that which pulls out the flavor. We are those who are designed to go into places where there is death and to bring life. We were designed to those who are going to those places that are in chaos and to bring beauty. We are those who are to step in and to take those places that are mundane and dull and in the routine of life, not the human story that God was designing, and to bring the flavor to life. You are the spice of life, if you will. And this is what we were designed for. We were designed to interrupt the lifelessness that is plaguing humanity. And the beautiful thing is that you were given a time and a place to do this. You were given a workplace to be the salt in. You were given a family to be the salt in. You were given a neighborhood to be the salt in. The question is, are you actually bringing flavor to the world around you? Are you actually stepping into the places that are filled with lifelessness and bringing life into them? See, because if you aren't, the scriptures say that we then become worthless. That's like a hard truth, right? He says that if you lose your saltiness, you're no good. We might as well throw you out and trample on you. Now, I'm not saying Jesus is going to do that. Don't worry, all right? but he says, look, here's the thing. If you are not actually making a difference in the world around you by simply stepping in and saying, hey, I have life that's available to me, and I want to give that to you. If you're not, then your life becomes worthless. But here's the good thing. It seems like whether we bring value or not to our world around us is actually up to us. It's not some people have salty genes and some people don't, right? Some people are capable of bringing life to the world around us that is filled with death, and some people aren't. It just says you get to choose whether or not you step in as the salt of life. It's up to you whether or not you're going to make the difference that you long to make in this space. But then Jesus instantly switches metaphors, as he's prone to do. First he's talking about salt, and then he's like, one second you're the salt of the earth, and now you're the light of the world, right? And he goes on to give this metaphor. See, we live in a world where light is all around us. We live in a world where we, of course, have daylight, but we live in a world where when the sun goes down, we can flip a switch and suddenly we have light and can continue on in our day. But when this was written, it was a time when life stopped when the sun went down. And when the sun went down, it was dark and you went to bed. You couldn't stay up on Facebook, right? You couldn't get that good Instagram shot of dinner. There was nothing available like that. It was just dark. And those that had oil were able to light a lamp and they could continue on their day's work. In fact, they would take that lamp and set it high up in the house so that the entire house could be illuminated and they could continue on with their life. But those who didn't have the light were stuck in darkness. They were not able to continue on with what's possible. Life just stopped for them because darkness had overtaken them. See, and there is something powerful about having a city that had a light on a hill that could wipe away the darkness. I don't like flying at night, partly because when you look out the window, you can't see anything. I imagine that we're just flying over a giant abyss, right? And that's where my mind goes. But there's something comforting when you're flying, especially flying into Ontario, and it's dark because of the mountains, and it's dark because of the Central Valley, and there's just nothing in sight. And then you cross over those mountains, and all of a sudden, right, lights. It's like, oh, good, there's civilization somewhere that we're landing soon. There's this moment that goes, oh, good, I'm home, and we're not flying over the abyss of death that we find ourselves in those moments. See, in the same way, our light was designed to be a lamp for our community. We were designed to be those who illuminated the world around us, who had the light of God within us, and that everywhere we went, we said, hey, you do not have to be overtaken by the darkness. You do not have to be overtaken by depression and hopelessness and anxiety and the hopelessness that comes with life, that you can actually continue because I am going to step in and the light of God that is shining in me will be there for you. So you are designed to light up the darkness for those around you. And the beautiful thing about light is that it is so pervasive. It is that you don't need a huge light to light up the night. In fact, it only takes a spark to get a fire going, right? I remember I was living up in Running Springs, and we went through this night hike. It was a really, really intense night hike through the mountains, and we had gotten to the top, and we got to the top, and our flashlight went dead, and we had to find our way back. And if you've ever been hiking at night in the dark, it's a horrible experience, right? Especially when people around you are like bears and all kinds of crazy stuff. But we're hiking back down, and we couldn't see anything, and we're fumbling over the darkness, and we're going through, and this guy in the back says, oh, well, I have a flashlight. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me, right? After we have bruises and scabs on us and horrified of the bears around us. And he said, oh, but it won't really make a difference. It's just one of these little key lights, like a pin light. And you know what was amazing is we got that pin light, we put it right in front of us, we gathered around, and we shined it on the ground, and we were able to walk steady the entire way. That it actually didn't take a giant flame to illuminate the path that was in front of us. All it took was a small spark that was in front of us to get us there. See, the power of light is that darkness cannot overcome it. That darkness cannot overcome the light. And that if you are the light of the world, there is nothing that can overcome you in that process. And the beautiful thing is that there is nothing around you that can overcome it. That your light is designed to pierce into the darkness of your community around you, to be the light that is so necessary there. You were designed to be radiant. If you ever wondered what difference you were designed to make on this earth, you were designed to be radiant. Don't tell me you weren't designed to make a difference. This is who you are, you salt of the earth, you light of the world. You were designed to serve the world through love. All of these lies that we believe have a very tragic part to them. That when we believe them, there's a tragedy that takes place in our lives when they take root. And the tragedy with this one is not that it causes you to live a life smaller than you were designed to live, although that is a tragedy. That you live a life exponentially smaller than the greatest life that you were designed to live while you were here. See, the greatest tragedy is that it actually blinds you from the difference that you are making while you're busy believing this lie. See, because here's the thing. You were designed to make things different, to change the atmosphere wherever you go. And you never get to turn off that reality. See, we like to think that if I step back and say, well, I don't really make a difference and withdraw myself, that's somehow a neutral experience for other people. That somehow it's just us moving into the shadows and allowing someone else to step into light to do what they're doing. But it is actually not a neutral experience for you or for anyone else. I love that we get to meet in this beautiful location. One of the things that I like are these stage lights that we have all around us. They're really beautiful. They can change colors and they bring light to the world around us. In fact, they were designed to illuminate the room, right? That's what they were designed for. They bring light to the stage. We have lights coming this way. They bring lights to us coming this way. We have lights above us that were designed to shine in the room. And that's their purpose. They really don't serve anything else besides that. It would be kind of silly to buy thousands of dollars worth of equipment and install it and say, let's just look at it, right? Never plug it in and never touch it. But what would happen if one day the lights actually believed this lie that I don't make a difference in the world? What would happen if one day they were like, you know what? I don't really make a difference. I don't really move anything. My life doesn't really matter. No one really actually cares about me. So I'm going to shut off. I'm going to shut down. I'm going to go away. I'm going to live small. See, what happens is not a neutral experience. What happens is not an experience where it's even. See, the lights are making a difference even right now while they are believing that they don't make a difference. It's crazy, right? Here's the crazy thing, is that your life was designed to make things different. But what is the difference that you are making? Because there is no neutral in life. You are either bringing the spice to life or you are adding to the mundane existence of humanity. You are either shining your light or you are actively contributing to the darkness around you. You are either serving the world through love or you are in the process of thieving it, robbing it, stealing it from others. You are either moving people towards life or death. There is no neutral. And that is scary because it means that you are always, always, always making a difference, whether you like it or not. The question is this the difference that you want to make? You can turn the lights on. It's always funny to me how certain things in life don't work until they do. Have you noticed that? I have so many people who come to me and we talk through things and I'm like, hey man, you should really get into some counseling. I think it would be good for you. And about like 50% of the people say counseling doesn't work. You ever thought that before? Like counseling doesn't work. Until they actually get into counseling and start working the counseling and it works, right? I've had people come to me and say, yeah, I'm not going to do Financial Peace University. Why wouldn't you go through Financial Peace? Well, I know people who have been through Financial Peace University, and they're still a financial mess. Well, there's also people who have been through Financial Peace University, and the Financial Peace University has been through them, and their life's just working fine, right? I know people, I work as a coach, and people say, yeah, I'm not going to get a coach. Coaching doesn't work. And strangely enough, coaching doesn't work until you decide that coaching's going to work, and then it works. It's strange how people say dieting doesn't work until they just pick a diet and do it for 6 months, and strangely enough, it works, right? That's the crazy thing that we find all around us, that your life will feel like it doesn't matter until you decide that it actually matters. Your life will continue to feel like you don't make a difference, that you're not enough, that people aren't there for you, and they don't care about you until you decide, no, I actually do make a difference, and I'm going to go make the difference that I'm committed to. See, here's the crazy thing. In John chapter 8, starting in verse 12, this is what Jesus says about himself. Remember how he just said, you are the light of the world? In John chapter 8, verse 12, he says, when Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, I'm the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. See, here's what I think is crazy, is Jesus says, I am the light of the world. And then now he says, you are the light of the world. Here's the crazy thing. Jesus is actively handing over his light and his influence to you. The only reason that you get to be the light of the world is Jesus says, I'm the light of the world. And I'm going to take all of that radiance, luminousness, and I'm going to put it in you so that you could actually go make the difference in the world that I long for you to make, so that you would shine so bright that people would look at your life and they would see the face of God. See, that's what you were designed for. That's what you were created for. That's what you were connected to. Don't tell me that you don't make a difference. See, I'm often calling people and connecting with people who miss Sundays a lot or maybe come to our community group and we miss them for a while. Not because I'm some crazy controlling pastor who's like, you need to be here, rah, rah. But because here's the crazy thing that I know is that you make a difference when you're here. That you make a difference when you're at your community group. See, the crazy thing is that I know if someone's missing from my group, I am missing a part of God that day. I am missing a representative of him that day. And I'm not getting the fullest experience that's available, because whether or not you show up or you don't show up makes a difference. And it contributes to the experience that we have. Last Sunday was a hilarious mess. We launched this series, I Told Me So, right after Easter. Easter was like a blowout experience. I mean, biggest Sunday we've ever had at Mosaic. It was insane. Lots of people, confetti cannons. It was awesome, right? It was awesome. And I was praying because my faith was stretched so big at Easter, because I was like, dear God, let's have like, I would awesome if we have like 160 people here with us. We had 322. I was like, what? Right? That's crazy. And last Sunday I was like, Lord, let's have 100 this Sunday. Because for me, I'm not like a crazy numbers person, but we have a phrase here at Mosaic that says people matter most, and every number is a person. So if you're going to count people, you have to count people. And so I said, God, let's just have 100 people here this week. And I woke up, and I wasn't feeling great. I mean, my stomach was a mess. I had fever that week, and I wasn't doing too good. And I just felt off my game in terms of how I was speaking. The worship team was awesome, but there was all these technical issues that they were going through with that. We set up our baptistry, and we've always had people get baptized. And that Sunday, no one got baptized. It was one of those Sundays that was like, this is not okay, right? And it was awesome because I had just preached a message about how you are not actually good enough. Yeah. And the whole day, that thought kept creeping into my head. I'm like, no, 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 no. But you know, the funny thing was is that I said, all right, God, I'm not going to actually believe that. And I'm going to start thinking about next week about how every single human being makes a difference. Every single human being counts. And it's even in just the small little things. And Monday morning, we got to the office like we normally do. And there's a few things we do in the morning. We get there on Monday morning. And one of those is Leslie enters attendance and stuff for our Sunday morning. And you know how many we had last Sunday? 99. And I thought, okay, God, you were speaking to me all last Sunday. What do you have to say about this? And you know what he said? He said, it only took one that made a difference last week. And they made a difference. That one person made a difference. And this is not like a guilt trip if you weren't here last week, but you were the one. But you know what? I wanted actually that reality to haunt me. And I wanted it to haunt us. Because I thought, you know what, Nathan, everywhere you go, you are making a difference. How you show up, how you don't show up, if you show up, if you don't show up, how you are giving yourself, how you are not giving yourself. See, and I want this to haunt us as a community as we live our lives. That the lie of I don't make a difference in the world should be so disgusting to us because we are so busy making a difference in the world that we would actually go out and serve with love, that we would go out and be the salt of the world, that we would bring spice everywhere we went, that we would be those who illuminated the darkness and people saw the face of God in us as we went and gave ourselves fully, and that never again would there be a 99. That we would be the community that says, no, we will be 100% in our giving of ourselves to one another. See, because you were designed to make an impact on this world. The question is, what impact will you make even here and now?
Thanks for listening to this week's talk. Join us next week for a new conversation or download the Mosaic Pomona app to continue interacting with the Mosaic Pomona community. Thanks and have a great week.